This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 25th of May, 2023. Lots to get through today. First of all, I will be closing the survey for Saxo Market Call listeners later today. We've gotten lots of answers in, not quite as much as the first time around. Please get in there. We've got a great roundup of questions for you on the Friday listeners edition of the podcast, and as well rounding up your answers to our couple of questions on where you think markets are headed. I think it'd be really interesting to run through with you. Back to today's markets, and we have a very interesting set of developments here with both a negative equity session for the most part until late trading. I think some of that basically on these the rise in treasury yields here, some of the concerning developments we've discussed elsewhere with luxury stocks coming off as an interesting indicator. But then after the hours, Peter, this NVIDIA news, I'm just in a crazy development in terms of the guidance, completely blasting estimates, supposed estimates at least, out of the water. A stunning, it would be, if those estimates correct, a 65% year-on-year growth rate in revenues if they are realized, the $11 billion for the next quarter. So obviously an AI situation here with NVIDIA, and even seeing AMD stock up 8% after hours is too, and the contagion effect. So take us through the market here, and I'm sure we'll be talking about NVIDIA later, but just maybe a headline or two before we get to it.
Yeah, we were in trading, you know, inside the range, and there was actually considerable weakness across global equity markets yesterday. You know, a lot of different news items from, you know, new high for the cycle in core inflation in the UK, as we talked about. You know, nervousness over sticky inflation. Could the Fed even, you know, would they maybe even hike rates more, etc. So. And nervousness over the economy. But then, as you said, with NVIDIA, things turned around. We bounced back a little bit in the S&P 500, more so in the NASDAQ 100. And then in this listener survey, some listeners have actually said that they wanted me to do sometimes a little bit more in-depth analysis on different companies. So this is, of course, the opportunity to do that. So sit back, John and Ole, and let me take you through NVIDIA. So you can see here on slide 4 in today's slide deck that this is a quarterly revenue chart of NVIDIA. You can see how revenue has progressed since the first quarter of 2015, and very, very, very strong results. The high interest rates that killed basically crypto, temporarily at least, in 2022 also sacked the revenue of NVIDIA because their GPUs are used for crypto mining. But we already had a comeback in the previous quarter, which they announced yesterday. $7.2 billion of revenue versus 6.5. I'll get back to that point in a few seconds. But the light blue bar here is the $11 billion that you talked about, John, and that I think puts the whole trend and explosion in AI research and implementation into perspective. It's an enormous demand wave that is ushering over NVIDIA at this point. And I want to, and as I said in our internal call with all our sales guys, etc., I said, I don't recall I've seen anything like this at my 13 years at Saxo, with a company of this size, with this revenue, beating estimates this much, with so incredibly high expectations going into the earnings release. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
Yeah, and just a thought on valuation as well, because of course this is stunning growth. Again, it would be 65% year on year. Of course, it does kind of get it back to a previous trend, but an over $900 billion on the valuation with this latest markup, a new record high in the share price. I was just looking. I don't know if this includes where it closed yesterday. I assume it does on the Bloomberg. 29.2 times sales. I'd love to have a magical database I could quickly say, okay, show me any company with more than, say, I don't know, $5-10 billion in revenue yearly that ever traded at 29.2 times sales. And what was the future prospect for that company in 1, 3, and 5 years? Of course, my point being valuation. Can this valuation be justified? Can any company of this size grow market cap wise, continue to grow at anything resembling this clip?
Yeah, exactly. So on slide 5, I put in the 12-month forward enterprise value. So that's the market value plus the net debt. So the cash on hand minus the debt minus cash at hand on the balance sheet. And you can see here how NVIDIA is just, you know, basically taking it off into the stratosphere compared to other technology companies, there is typically quite a decent link, if you're profitable at least, between the EV to sales ratio and then your profit margins. And that's of course also the case. NVIDIA is quite profitable. Their profit margins are quite strong. With the 25% gain in extended trading that we saw last night, we will go to a new high in this EV to sales ratio. It will push beyond that high that we had when technology stocks were clearly in a bubble that was then burst by the acceleration in bond yields. So I think you're asking a pretty good question here, John. In quant investing, there is this, you know, you do these factor analysis, and EV to sales ratio, if you take the entire US equity market and you divide it into deciles and you run it through history, is one of the best predictors of low expected returns, the highest decile on EV to sales ratio. So your expectation would be that expected returns are quite low for NVIDIA. Having said that, that's an aggregate average observation. If you go through back time doing this analysis, you will find companies inside this decile, like Amazon had high EV to sales ratio for quite some time. So there'll always be these outliers, these, you know, very special fish that separates themselves from this pack that otherwise go down and deliver bad results. Maybe NVIDIA is part of that. I think the caveat here, the joker, is that this is a company that already is a $1 trillion company. It's already a massive company.
Or almost a trillion, but yeah, just...
Yeah, exactly. It's already one of the biggest companies in the world in terms of market value, whereas Amazon, when they were defying this quant ratio that I talked to you, just talked about, they were a small fish back at the time. They were, you know, swimming into a massive ocean of opportunities. And the question is whether NVIDIA is doing that. I have made two slides here just to provide some perspective on NVIDIA. So the first one is what I call unpredictable demand. So we've talked about this before. How good are companies actually in evaluating the true causalities of their own revenue? Do they actually understand what is lying ahead? And in February, they had an investor presentation. This is in February. So ChatGPT was already online. Things were already progressing. This is mid-February. They have this investor presentation. They're guiding at that point $6.5 billion of revenue for the quarter that they reported last night. They actually delivered 7.2. So they missed by more than 10% in the matter of 6 weeks.
Now, when you say miss, you mean that they underestimated how strong the results would be. It sounds like there's something bad, but they underestimated how good the results would be by that. Yeah.
Thank you very much, John, for correcting. Yeah, exactly. They underestimated the impact in just 6 weeks. And I think it's a testimony to how quickly the demand function shifted for NVIDIA, because arguably, of course, they understand their own business, but I think they have been surprised about the developments as well. And I think it brings into the question, John, which, as you said on our internal call, the question is whether this is the AI hype is so strong that everyone just scrambling. I mean, if you're a CEO and you're not willing to talk about AI, maybe even take some risk on behalf of your investors or shareholders in AI, then you look foolish. So everyone's just, you know, just do something on AI, right? And you buy these GPUs. We need to do some research. We need to do some implementations, etc. And maybe we're just having this, you know, this geyser of demand, very, very short term, and then maybe there will be a hangover on the other side.
Well, it's been said that ChatGPT is the most rapidly adopted technology in the history of any product or technology. And then this whole, like you've pointed out, that Google had a lot of this stuff already, and has been forced into motion by what OpenAI has done to launch their Bard. So I imagine suddenly the server resources Google requires have gone up by some huge factor that they've had to scramble to expand their server facilities to accommodate the demand for the use of Bard and their AI offering. So yeah, it's a great question.
And that's a great segue into also highlighting that this risk. You and I have been talking about it before, John, also when we have talked about recently electric vehicles and electrification, because one of the key drivers in the future are going to be electricity consumption for data centers. And if this AI is on a path or trajectory that some of the biggest optimists in the world are believing, then, you know, the demand for electricity in combination with us turning the heating sector from natural gas into electric heat pumps, and we're also electrifying our transportation. I just wonder whether there are, at one point we will stumble into a physical constraint. Because if you look at still at slide six, this is a slide deck as well from this investor presentation. The key thing for NVIDIA's growth here is what's called accelerated computing. They really present and explain the concept much better than I can do, but it essentially, you can see the blue dots there on that chart. The petering off of the old classic CPUs, the single thread CPUs, there was a limit. So as Jensen, the CEO and co-founder of NVIDIA, said, Moore's law is dead, basically. Moore's law was how to explain the acceleration.
It's going parallel versus intensifying the power of the single core.
Yeah. And you can see with the green dots there, that is basically GPUs and accelerated computing, what NVIDIA is doing. It basically just shifted the entire technology trajectory from being hitting a limit to basically creating more growth into the future. But go read that. And here is the thing. So there is arguably an AI bubble going on. I think I feel pretty comfortable in saying that. That's not to say that the technology not will deliver a lot of revenue growth, etc. But I think the acceleration in this technology is so fast and the excitement is so fast, John, that it makes it extremely difficult for investors to predict. And when you have a very big range and outcomes in the future, it's just impossible to price. And because it's something that's impossible to price, there will be mistakes. And that is inherently part of the drivers, in an investment bubble. But and Jensen, the CEO of NVIDIA, I can fully understand his personal motivation. I mean, he's looking into this opportunity, his personal wealth from this. Maybe he could become the wealthiest person in the entire world. But he's doing nothing to stop this bubble from accelerating, because he said in an interview last night that this is just the beginning of a 10-year cycle. And they have this slide which is used and thought about by a lot of global investors. This is slide 7 in today's slide deck. They call it a giant market opportunity. They say that they have a $1 trillion revenue opportunity in this accelerated computing. And just for reference, John, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't the global GDP somewhere around $90 trillion?
I think it's around 100, but...
100, right? Yeah. To me, it sounds like a very large share of global GDP, but maybe I'm totally wrong. To me, it just sounds incredible, because if you think about Microsoft with revenue of around, I can't actually remember what it is, but that's a 200 billion, maybe. It's very a big amount, right? So 1 trillion, I think it's too much. But
do they mean specifically for NVIDIA? $1 trillion in revenue.
Well, NVIDIA has a very large market share. I think this is the opportunity, and then you can multiply that by a market share. But given that there only are two real contestants in GPUs, AMD and NVIDIA right now, let's say it was 50-50. I think there will be one dominant market player. So let's say it's 75% market share, then that's $750 billion. In any case, I think this was a little bit of a deeper dive into NVIDIA. I think potentially also AI will be a bigger part of our next quarterly outlook. So stay tuned for that one. It's an exciting theme, and we will do more about this.
And a head start on our Listener's Edition podcast, addressing hopefully most of your NVIDIA-related questions for now. Okay, back to the daily of what's going on here. I think it's, again, it's the risk-off that was going on before the NVIDIA. I think a lot of this is traced back to where the market is pricing yields. Just a reminder, a couple things going on here on slide 8. That the implied yield for the December of this year Fed funds, so where we'll be after the FOMC meeting in December, has crept back higher, and essentially we're only at 125 basis point rate cut. If you recall, we were down in the sort of the 3-cut range, so we're pricing out those cuts. The market doesn't like that, and I think that's a key thing to watch. And again, is this Treasury move and these rise in yields about the anticipated pension liquidity and the Treasury issuance that is coming when we presumably get a debt ceiling deal? Which is none is in sight. That today looks like the last chance until next Tuesday, in all likelihood, because of the long weekend for the House and the holiday for everyone in the U.S. on Monday. And then just on the right, just pointing out the value destruction for those holding long bonds. Just that's a UK 0.625% 2050 gilt that was trading as high as 90 to 95 in December of 2021. Now it's worth 39.2 cents or pence on the pound, if you will. And then an FX yields pushing, if you go forward to the next slide on slide 9, pushing the yields, the yen lower. You see dollar yen breaking up towards 140 overnight. Not quite there. Kiwi suffering the most here on the huge markdown post the RBNZ dovish guidance we talked about yesterday. And on the note of that gilt there, still concerned about sterling, watching its relative performance versus the euro as a sign of distress. We have UK 2-year gilt yields at the highest they've been, save for 2 days during the heart of that terrible crisis from the Truss-Quartang mini budget back last fall, when things are basically going down the drain for the entire country. So watching for whether this triggers a wider instability, it's very remarkable when you have rates marked that much higher and the currency is unable to respond. It's almost like an emerging currency type of behavior. So we need to watch out for that. And then, of course, in something like Aussie, suffering close to the bottom of the range there versus the dollar. And that goes into your space, Ola, with the copper prices hitting new lows here locally, at least, and for the year. And we're talking about it. We have our special edition podcast coming out, our deep dive on Monday. We're putting it on a Monday because that is a holiday for us as well. And I wanted to get that its own standalone session. I think it was very much worth it, the one we recorded yesterday. We were looking at this together as we're talking about, and that podcast talks about investing in the commodity market and specifically equities. And Peter, you and I are talking about things like BHP and Fortescue yielding 13-14%. Even with these, because of these copper prices suffering. So, Ola, take us first through the copper market and maybe a little bit on what's on your slide here on slide 10.
Yeah, basically, we can see that some of the headwinds that you just mentioned, John, interest rates not coming down, perhaps going up before we see a shallow cut, the strength of the dollar, and then just the recession risk that's continued to rise across some of the key areas. And then the commodity. Not so commodity-intensive recovery in China has really been key drivers for the weakness we've seen recently. And looking at the chart there, we almost are retracing 50% of the whole rally that we have had from the 2020 low. So right now, sellers are in control. Short sellers, the hedge fund industry has been short. There's a market for more than a month now, so they are currently in control of the price action, and it's having a negative impact on the miners, as you can see on the right hand side. Their month to date performances are pretty poor. Some of the major ETFs tracking the industry is down around 7%. But it's just once again just very difficult to square the dots with where we right now have obviously a short term outlook that has deteriorated. But against that, we still have the long term outlook where supply issues are going to play an important part in what we believe will still be a recovery. I just put some comments from taken out of the mining companies' quarterly reports that has been published within the last few weeks. And they're all pointing towards almost the same challenges. As we can see, the high input prices, diesel, electric and labor, lower ore grades, rising regulatory costs, government intervention, climate change causing, in some places, flooding, in other places, lack of water. And these are all challenges that are not going to go away. And Peter talked about the electrification earlier. And it's just a long-term prospect that still points towards support for the sector, simply because these mining companies, they have to have the revenues in order to have the appetite for the investment that are needed.
Yeah, and I saw a piece of analysis this morning because I was also looking at the copper industry because we've talked so much about it, you and I, Ole, and it was a drill down into the consumption patterns that you're seeing in China. And right now, the copper demand from construction is going down also from Europe, and but especially in China. But then you looked at the composition in China and where the growth is right now, an enormous growth is in grid infrastructure also in China, because they are producing a lot of electric vehicles, I guess, also doing heat pumps, etc. So I think, as we talked about with Siemens Energy, the massive orders, that wave of orders that are coming, we're talking about 50-60% growth, and big need for grid infrastructure investments, which are power lines and transformation stations. I think there is an underlying story here that I don't know whether it's missed by the market, but I wouldn't be surprised if suddenly we in maybe forward 1 or 2 years we'll talk about this massive demand that is coming from grid infrastructure investments.
And the irony, also the ESG of investing, ESG rules around maybe investing in a mining company versus, as you've talked about, you need these metals for this green transformation. And I guess that might go for the same for the uranium industry as well. The ESG focus or angle on that and the mining. I mean, you're talking about ore grades. I mean, the amount of uranium you actually extract from these ores is staggeringly low also because you're able to do so because it's such a valuable commodity once you do have uranium.
Indeed, and it's a sector that continues to attract a lot of attention. And the reason I put in the slide is that we just saw a new 13-month high early in the week in spot uranium trading above $54. We saw a bit of a flip higher early in the week in across the board. A little bit of setback since then, but it's just a sector where we are likely to continue to see demand continue to rise. The U.S. Energy and Commerce Committee just approved a ban on Russian low-enriched uranium imports, and that basically means they need to find it somewhere else. All the reactor constructions right now are mostly in Asia. We're not seeing anything in Europe. We're only seeing one in the U.S. And so these are really areas which you keep an eye on for potential game changer. Just highlighting one of the ETFs or trusts that's involved in this sector. It's the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust. It's available as a CFD on the platform. Right now, it's actually trading at a 13% discount to its net asset value. And if we are seeing these spot uranium prices remain firm around these levels, then obviously that discount will come down again, back down towards the average, which has been around 6.5% for the past year or so. So I think there are some opportunities that needs to be looked at. But generally, the longer term outlook for the industry, I would say, looks promising here.
Okay, so moving swiftly along, Peter, stocks to watch. NVIDIA, without a doubt, a stock to watch today, and I guess AMD is a corollary to that with the 8% rise it saw after hours. But on the opposite side of the results spectrum, we had Snowflake out yesterday. Take us through that one, and what else you're watching today.
Yeah, we flagged. We don't need to talk more about NVIDIA. You can read the numbers and figures here and the price chart on slide 12. So Snowflake, we highlighted it in yesterday's equity note, an earnings preview we did, and There is just so much evidence that there is a considerable slowdown in corporate technology spending. We have seen that across the board. We've also seen weakness in cloud infrastructure companies from Microsoft, Google, etc. Alibaba recently laid off a couple of thousand employees in China related to their cloud business. And Snowflake just basically confirmed that. I mean, it's a company that is still growing at a considerably higher rate than a lot of other companies, but the guidance for Q2, especially on their what they call product revenue, disappointed the market. And when you have a company that is priced for growth, and that growth is not coming in at the pace investors are expected, then of course you have a repricing, and the shares were down 12%. Fast forward to slide 13, today's earnings, we've highlighted two. So Costco. I think that Costco is going to be a story just like we have seen from all the other U.S. retailers. Input cost pressures from rising wages, consumers holding back. There is a shift in the mix, what customers are buying. You can see here on the little insert that the expectation is for revenue growth to decline to 4% year on year. So Costco as well, if you back out inflation, is also going to see a decline in volume growth. But the market or analysts are expecting a pickup in growth over the summer months, as you can see there. And then Medtronic is one of the other companies that we have highlighted. You can call it a very boring company. I think it's a very high quality medical device company. It's a big one. It's super predictable what they're doing in terms of revenue growth and margins. I guess it's a company that really, if you are a quality investor, that is something that you would consider. So watch out for that one if you're interested in getting exposure to the healthcare sector, and if you want to look at something else than AI-related stocks.
All right. And then on the macro calendar today, we have the South African Central Bank, one of the last banks. Looks like it's still in emerging markets, looking still at hiking rates, 50 basis points expected from them. The South African rand under pressure due to accusations from the U.S. side of shipping weapons to Russia. They also can't seem to run their country in terms of providing power to it. It's a very difficult situation for the country, and obviously inflationary risks from a very weak currency. Latest Chicago Fed National Activity Index doesn't garner a market reaction, but interesting there. And then the weekly claims, I highlighted it in red. The market may be a bit touchy around these. Last week, we had the relief that it was back below 250K after the prior week's first bump above that level in quite some time. But still, amidst widespread nervousness that we could risk revisions after a significant revision to the upside on a prior set of points that was suddenly showed that it looks like we are seeing a lot more slack in the U.S. market than there had been previously. A GDP revision also up today, and a 7-year treasury auction. We're seeing massive demand for these auctions. I'll tell you, we'll talk tomorrow about one of the risks here being whether they cancel some future auctions around this a debt ceiling situation. Again, maybe not getting anything today. And if we don't get anything today, it looks like it could be until next Tuesday before you see the next news item there. And we close out the week tomorrow with the PC inflation data point from the U.S. and Michigan Sentiment Survey. And I think that Bank of Japan meeting is shaping up to be a very interesting one. If the yen continues weaker here and yields continue to rise, they're going to have to start tinkering and tinkering quickly with their policy and stop sitting on their hands with their policy review if they want to avoid another debacle with an aggravated yen decline. There's some measures of inflation expectations in Japan that are picking up quite aggressively. So we'll stay tuned for that as well. Until then, we'll be back tomorrow with a roundup of your answers to the Saxo Market Call survey. Get those answers in. I'll be closing the survey later today, and we'll have a roundup tomorrow in the Saxo Market Call Listeners Edition. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.